Time to get our view from the middle. Our Wednesday leadoff guy. Find his work for USA Today, either in your hotel lobby, at a newsstand, or online at usatoday.com. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder, a good day to you, sir. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you, Steve?
All is well. So let's start with the obvious. After some late-game heroics, sometimes on a huge stage, you get the hyperbole, the greatest this, the best that. But Monday, with 5 seconds ago, we had a double-clutch three-pointer to tie, and then Chris Jenkins hits the game-winner as the horn sounds today. As opposed to saying, is it the best thing you've ever seen or the most exciting, just safe to say, the bar set pretty high. This is one of those things for people who love sports like we do, just stands the test of time.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I don't know if it's the best game you've ever seen, even in a high-level championship, situation. But I think it was maybe the best finish you've ever seen on a championship stage, because of what you just said. First of all, you had the circus shot three-pointer to tie it with 5 seconds left. You thought, wow, this thing's going to overtime. And then you had the, 25-footer or whatever Chris Jenkins hit at the buzzer. I mean, literally time ran out, while the ball was in the air. And so, I don't know another NCAA championship game where it was really decided at the buzzer. And I get it. We have the NC State win over Houston to Fly Slam at Gamma. But if you'll recall, the dunk there came kind of at the buzzer, but they didn't have the rule at the time where you'd stop the clock after the made basket. So it's really hard to know if, in fact, it would have been at the buzzer. It's not quite the same thing. But, I don't really want to split hairs. This is probably the best finish since that one.
Yeah,
NCAA title game.
Yeah, and this one was planned. People forget the dunk by Lorenzo Charles was off an air ball by Derek Wittenberg.
That was an alley-oop. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, but, okay. We've kept that secret for 33 years.
That's what I would be saying if I was Derek Wittenberg.
you look at a guy like Roy Williams, although he was a little bit crabby leading up to the final, had issues with the media, didn't like questions about the pending academic scandal. But it turns out that a lot of people knew that game-winning play called Nova was coming. So regardless of the status of the coach, under these circumstances, fair to say, how are you not looking for something like that?
Well, I mean, I think you are looking for something like that, but there's three different options, from my understanding, on the play. One of them is that Arch Diacono can just keep driving, go down the lane if he doesn't get stopped. The second is there was apparently a screen and a guy trying to pop open on one of the wings. And then thirdly was the trailer, which is what Jenkins was. So it's one thing to know it's coming. It's another thing to stop it in the moment. So, and I don't know if they knew it was coming. I mean, have we seen Villanova run it before? I mean, Villanova's practiced it a bazillion times, but have we seen him run it before? I don't know. I mean, you only see that game at the end of game situation.
Yeah, apparently against Seton Hall they'd run it, and a couple of analysts leading up said that there's this play coming. I think Grant Hill was one of them, and maybe somebody on the ESPN radio feed. So, like I said, I'm not going to second-guess Roy Williams. He knows a little bit more about college basketball than me, but it just seemed like a lot of people were like, had they not see that coming, which is kind of a strange statement, I guess.
Well, I think it's a little strange. Here's two things. One, it's really hard to execute in late-game situations on both sides of the ball, frankly. It's really hard. And so the Tar Heels that sort of converged on Diacono, I don't get all upset about the fact that they converged on the guy with the ball, who is their best player, by the way, probably, who is a guy you think is a real threat to shoot the three and is nearing sort of the three-point line. I don't have a real problem with that. There was also sort of a screen action near midcourt that kind of caused a little bit of confusion. On the one hand, North Carolina didn't execute the defense as well as it could have, and they're going to kick themselves over that for a long time. But that play on the offensive end, before we ever talk about whether the ball goes in or not, the play was executed to perfection just to get him the shot to get it up.
So along those lines, the narrative's been the buzzer beater, And, you know, you look at a guy like Jay Wright, an assistant to Rolly Massimino in the late 80s. He's been the coach here for 16 years, a Philly area guy who was just named National Coach of the Year. You think about what they did to Oklahoma. They won 35 games. So, like you said, rather than just kind of rank on what didn't go right, can we take a moment to say, wow, what a terrific job by Jay Wright, and
yeah,
how worthy a champion are the Cats?
Were they the best team in the country all year? I don't know that, but did we not talk about for weeks how we weren't really sure who the best team in the country
yep.
was, because it was a year full of parity? And I still think after the tournament, that's the case. There were six or seven or eight teams that could have won it. That said, one team played better than all the other teams in the tournament. That's sort of the nature of a tournament, and it was Villanova, and they're really deserving of winning the whole thing. I've got to tell you, you know, we all talk about them shooting 71.4% against Oklahoma. And that was sort of one of those corresponding, one team has an unbelievably good game, the other team has its worst game, and you put those two things together, and it's a historic blowout. But to shoot 71.4% is one thing. You know what they shot for the two games of the NCAA tournament? They shot 64.something%.
It's crazy.
Which of course means they fell back to earth and shot about 60% against North Carolina. That's unbelievable to do that in the two games in the Final Four.
Now, I'm not sure if you caught the article a couple weeks back. Dan Shaughnessy, longtime Boston Globe reporter, after the UConn women beat somebody by like 70, he says, you know, nobody wants to watch, they're ruining the game. And then, of course, last night, Gina Auriemma makes it 11 titles in 11 tries, you know, one more than Wooden. Do we appreciate it historically, but is there an angle where, my God, they're winning every game by 40, nobody wants to watch? What's your angle on that?
Well, I actually think Shaughnessy has a point. I think it's more nuanced than the way he made the point, but here it is. I happen to like women's college basketball. I really do. But you have to start with that. You have to say that as a disclaimer, because you immediately get tarred and feathered as though you don't like it if you have this view.
Right.
That said, and I don't have a problem with the fact that UConn's won four straight national championships. That's great. That's a great level of dominance. It's not great that they won for the game, that they won 75 straight games. But the fact that they're beating, especially this last year, beating everybody by 30 or more, basically. And I know it's not everybody, but almost everybody. And that the NCAA tournament is basically a six-game romp, and everybody understands that there's no way anybody can come close to them. That's actually bad for the game. That doesn't mean that women's college basketball is a bad game. I'm not saying that. It's a really good, exciting game. But to have one team that is so much better than everybody else that you shouldn't even be on the same court with them in terms of competitiveness is bad for the game. That's what I say about it. Now, there's a lot of nuance in there, and I guarantee you there are people who are women's college basketball fans in your listening audience who have just said that I think it's a bad game and that women's college basketball is no good. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it would be a whole lot better if there was a whole lot more competitiveness, even on the upper tier of women's college basketball. Look, the Oregon State women's basketball team is an unbelievable story. You know, just starting with, you know, Scott Rook getting hired and basically having to have an open tryout. Wasn't that long ago, and here they are in the Final Four. But once they got to the Final Four and they were paired up against UConn, you understood that their run was over. Now, and that does not lessen their run at all. But wouldn't it have been nice if you thought, okay, there's at least a competitive chance here? Or in the finals against Syracuse, people were making a big deal about in the third quarter, Syracuse went on a 16-0 run, which, by the way, took them from 33 down to 17 down. And I'll say this, for the moment, because they lost by what, 31 or something?
Yeah, they lost by 31.
So you know, UConn calmly made up 14 of the 16 points. I mean, that is not good for the game to have one program that dominant, and that's my take on it. If you're a women's college basketball fan and your underlying interest is always A, the growth of the game, and B, the growth in the interest of the game because you feel like it's worthy that more people should watch it, then you should want there to be parity at the top and one team not to dominate. It is not the same as, say, if Alabama wins two more national titles in a row and they've won six out of eight or nine or whatever. It's not the same because Alabama's not beating everybody. They play by 40 points all the time.
Would it be accurate to say that some people in this debate have just kind of dug in and they took what was said about the constant routes not being interesting and bad for the game as almost a slight on the accomplishment of UConn.
Yeah, well, no question. There's no question. And this is not a slight on either the worth of the women's game or on what UConn has accomplished. It's just saying that for the good of the game, it would be better if UConn was not quite as dominant and other teams were good enough to challenge them. That's not the case. Certainly not the case this year. Now, that'll change over time, obviously, and we've seen it cycle back and forth. But look, the best thing that UCLA wasn't blowing everybody out every time they played anybody, even when they were so dominant. But let's say they were. The best thing that has happened to college basketball has been when one team hasn't dominated ever since, you know, the mid-70s when their run ended. It's become a much better game in that, you know, some years a Butler can get to the Final Four and almost win. Some a Villanova can win the whole thing. You know, this year there were six or eight teams we all thought could win it, and I think we were right. You know, how fun would it be if, you know, you picked the team, you knew going in that everybody else was just playing to get to the Final Four, which is a great thing to do, but they had zero chance, basically.
No, I see.
To win it because one team was going to win it and win it handily.
No, good points all as we continue with George Schroeder of USA Today. All right, I've got to deviate into a multiple choice segment because somebody sent us a link. The worst traditions in sports. I'm going to give you one, then two, then three. You tell me if it's time has passed or if you disagree and think it's time-tested and worthy, okay?
All right, and I can tell you what the worst tradition in sports is, but I'll let you go first.
Oh, okay. Well, if I don't ask it, then you could fill it in.
I will.
All right, so think Greg Popovich and some of the more snarky coaches. We come back from commercial, back to the action, yet we break away to hear an in-game sideline interview.
Yeah. What am I supposed to say here?
That it's got to go, or it's a good time-tested tradition and should stay.
It's one of the dumber things in the history of TV innovation.
All righty. I preface the next one with the explanation. It's from the Rant Report. It's seen as an acceptable opportunity to annoy people sitting behind you, the wave. What say you?
Oh, I guess I'm okay with that if you're at an international venue somewhere and nobody knows who you are.
Okay, so you're going to have to leave the country do the wave.
I'm not a big fan of the wave, but as long as it's a small wave that happens, you know, in the middle of the third quarter and nobody cares, and it doesn't keep going forever, I'm okay with that.
All right.
Do I think it's dumb? Yes, but I'm okay with it.
All right, so courtesy of the Bleacher Report, if we can watch Gone with the Wind without a break, we can make it through a baseball game. The seventh inning stretch and singing of Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
No, that's a great tradition. That should never change, ever, period. Is it an anachronism? Probably, but so is baseball, and we love it. So that should never change.
All right.
You did not name the worst tradition in sport.
Which is?
Well, I'm not really sure it's a tradition, but he claims it is one, and that is CBS announcer Jim Nantz deciding to give Ryan Archidiakono his tie right off his neck.
Right.
Because this is a little tradition I have, and I like to give it to a deserving senior at the end of every. I'd never heard this before because I don't really think it was a tradition he had. But how pretentious in the vein of Ron Burgundy do you have to be to think that it's going to be meaningful to anybody else other than you to give them your tie? You know who you are? You're the guy who called the games on TV. That's who you are. But I don't know if you've seen that or not. If you haven't, and if you listeners haven't, go look it up on Google. Jim Nantz giving the Villanova senior guard his tie, captured on video along with the audio of him telling him why he did it, as though that would be some great memento for Ryan Archidiakono. I can't pronounce it.
Archidiakono. We've been practicing all tournament long. We still can't get it right.
No, I can't. And here's worse. I can't spell it, which is what I really have to do. I have to go look it up every time. But that to me, if it actually is a tradition, and I'm not sure that it was, is the dumbest tradition in sport.
Well, here's an interesting twist to that. I've come across nobody else to verify this. I've been trying for 2 days. I worked with a guy who was about 10 years older than me. He was very stylish. And if somebody complimented him on his tie, he would give it to them. So I don't know if this exists somewhere, if it's an East Coast thing. But I had come across this before. And so you could make of that what you like. So I guess... there's also a tradition like no other that involves Jim Nantz. When it comes to Masters time, are you somebody like me who gets a little insane and can't wait for 4 days? Or are you I'll check in Sunday on the back nine and see if it's interesting guy?
Well, I'm closer to the latter, but I'm not that far to the extreme. I mean, I love the Masters, but I don't go, I'm not obsessed about it. You know, so I will say this though. If you want to spice up the post game afterwards, then since Jim Nantz obviously is a Masters too, I think that once they award the green jacket, he should award the Jim Nantz tie there too, and just see what happens. I think they would summarily expel him from the cabin.
Butler cabin kicks
out
goodbye.
Jim
Thank
Nantz. You for
Oh, man, that's awesome. Catch his work in USA Today online at George Schroeder. Fun stuff, George, as always. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll catch up next Wednesday.
All right. Thanks, Steven. Go Sluggers.
All right. Take it easy.